Welcome to Online for Authors, where I, Terry M. Brown, author of character-driven fiction and host of the podcast, introduce readers to characters they'd love to invite to lunch by interviewing authors, discussing their books, learning about the writing process, and even, on occasion, chatting live with a panel of authors to discuss topics relevant to both readers and writers. My guest today on Online for Authors is Rich LaMonica, author of the book Out of the Darkness. Rich is a 22-year veteran of the United States Army who was deployed on multiple occasions in support of the global war on terrorism. Fittingly, I read Out of the Darkness on Veterans Day. This novel follows a fictional soldier, Bull, who is fighting in Afghanistan. We meet each of his team members and several enablers, those who helped the team, along the way and discover who they were before they joined the military, what happened during this tour, and the consequences when the tour was over. Although this is a fictional story, Rich uses these characters to help others understand the realities of war and what soldiers face even when the bullets stop flying. My big takeaway is that our soldiers need and deserve better mental health services, and we as a people need to do everything in our power to support them, both while they are fighting and when they return home. Welcome to Online for Authors, where today we have Rich, author of Out of the Darkness. Welcome, Rich.
Thanks, Terry. Thanks for having me, and thanks for reaching out when my book first came out to say you want to come on. I said, this is awesome. Let me jump on there. As you know, you'll be on my show about a week or two to launch your third book since I've met you. So this is awesome.
I know. Isn't it crazy? I love the writing community and the podcasting community and how close-knit everyone is and how we just really support one another. It's fantastic. Before we get started, give me the little bit of an elevator speech about what is Out of the Darkness. What is this book?
Darkness started for me. I guess I started writing this probably in 2013-ish when I was starting to end my career. I was in Afghanistan. I was sitting on my computer after I got wounded. 2012-ish actually, and I was just thinking about all the things I've gone through to get to that point, and all my friends that I lost, and all the friends that I've been with, and people I'll never see again or never be the same. So I started just taking notes and writing, and as you know, as a writer, you write stuff, and then you say stuff, get angry at it, throw it against the wall. The computer I was writing on at the time actually died on me, so for a while it just was dormant. About 2 years ago, I started to write it again. Then I actually finished my first book that got released, 13 Step Guide to Success, came out. I said, if I finish that one, I have finished the one I actually wanted to start. So I kept writing, went through different titles, and I did a lot of character development. As you know, my daughter, with her help, I did a lot of character development for this book and combined a lot of the people I knew to make the book into what it is now. So every character in that book is probably four or five different people combined into one, to make one awesome dude or dudette, and then to show in the war and beat the battle, and then come out the other side and what happens.
Right, right. So why this story?
I think this story right now, it resonates very loudly within the veteran community, especially, and first responder community, especially. Suicide rates are extraordinarily high right now. In the veteran community, you'll see the VA say 22 a day, but it's actually about 44 a day that we lose to suicide. It depends on the definition of suicide. So if it's a traditional version of suicide, it's 22 a day. If it's suicide by crashing my vehicle or drug overdose, it goes up to 44 a day. And first responders, too, they're dealing with the PTSD and the trauma, because they never meet someone on their best day. They always meet them on their worst day. And that's the thing that stays in their minds forever. So that's why if you're getting this book out now, and then I can work on part two of it to get more resources out to veterans and first responders as we move forward.
Fantastic. So although this is fictional, obviously, when I was reading it, it seems like it's like stuffed to the brim with the truth, right? Like it's fictional, but it's not fictional. So tell me a little bit about like how difficult was it to write and separate out truth and fiction and then combine them in a way that was true but also a story,
Like that to me would be very hard because you obviously lived a lot of what you wrote, and right. yet you didn't write a memoir.
No, not at all. Okay. I remember talking to you about studies on all of your first two books, your studies you did into both your books, and you had made the historical references to them and such like that. And I knew I had to be historically correct in it, but I also knew I couldn't be actually accurate with everything. I couldn't say the exact props. I couldn't say the exact mountaintop. I couldn't say the exact person's name. So I had to use some freelancing, I guess, in that area to keep it more on the fiction side than the military fiction, right. military fiction side. And not get in trouble with military, not getting anyone upset that I used their story, but also pay homage to them as I went forward and tell them who they are in the story as I reach out to them now and see if they recognize it.
Yeah. So when you wrote it, I know that some people that write military fiction have to take it through a process where they get it vetted, I think, by the DOD or by someone. I don't know the process. Did you have to do that with this book as well? Or was this fiction enough that you didn't need that process?
It was fiction enough where I didn't have to. If I would have added units in there, or real units okay. in there, or dates, I would have had to send it up through the Pentagon chain for them to stamp okay. off or tell me what to correct it, put it out.
Okay. All right. Yeah, I was wondering about that. I had talked with someone else who had written a military. Theirs was more of a memoir, and they had to do a lot more of the, you know, getting it vetted and you know, you can't say that. We can't have that out there, you know.
Not yet.
Right. 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 The Amazon blurb, as I was reading it, this is one of the things that it said. Bull is struggling to hold onto his humanity while engulfed by the darkness of battle. Now, help those of us who are not veterans, who've not been to war, understand what that means. What are you trying to say there? That really struck me, that sentence.
As a man or woman in battle, they're in that gray area all the time of either being human or being animal. And we used to call the people we're fighting animals. They're animals out there. We got to kill those animals before they kill us. And you don't want to become that animal or inhumane at that time. So Bull, at that point, he's there looking down and wondering how he's going to stay human and not become that animal that he's fighting after seeing so much bloodshed and not to cross that line and become the person he doesn't want to become at all.
Right. And is that, I'm assuming that's a very common thread in anyone who has seen battle, that idea of staying human despite seeing and doing things that in, you know, society in general, you don't do.
It's right? very common. It's very common for everyone that has been on the other side of a weapon pointing at them to say, I don't want to be that person, but I have to be that person. I have right. to be better than that person right now to kill him or he's going to kill me. So I don't right. go home to my family. So you have to make that right. second decision at all times.
In my second novel, An Enemy Like Me, that book came about because my grandfather was in World War II. And I'm German-American, but many generations in the United States. And when he fought in the war, he ended up in Germany. And he told me one time that he always wondered if the person on the other side of his gun was a cousin. And that was something that, like, I think it haunted him probably most of his life, that idea that they were the enemy, but they could have also been family.
Right.
You know, just and like, how do you, 1800s. How do you, yeah, yeah, seriously. You know, you go back into the Civil War where it was brothers against brothers and neighbors against right. neighbors. And that idea of, you know, I've never had to live it. So I'm just going by what I've listened to other people say, but you know, it's me or them. And you right. certainly don't want it to be them that goes home. So you know, you do what has to be done. But then when it's all said and done, you still have to live with knowing that you lived through something where it was a me or them situation.
Right. And a decision you made ended someone's life. And now you're thinking, was it the right thing? Was I there for the right reason? Were they actually going to kill me? Were they going to? So all those mind control games going in your head. It's not like a scrambled egg. It's getting shaken up. And that's what happens to a lot of people. That tunnel goes into full mixer mode and you wind up in that downward spiral and you can't get out of it. And I think I tried to portray that towards the last half of the book to show how all the whole team kind of went through that spiral together.
And then how people come out of it in different ways.
Yes.
Some people find the help they need, maybe through a spouse. Some people find the help they need through a professional of some kind. Some people it's just through like friends and the team, and some people don't come out of it, you know, and they do the self-destruct.
Right. And yeah. I had a friend last year, he posted it 4 a.m. on Facebook. Today, I become a member of the 22. It was actually in March of this year. He fought since 2012, 2013. He's been fighting that demon and he just couldn't take it anymore. So he finally made that post and he left us because he couldn't. He sought help. He went through all the programs. Nothing helped him. And he finally said, I want to go to sleep, and ended it.
And as horrific as that is, I'm sure that there's part of you that understands that you get tired of the fighting.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, I was angry when I first read it. And then I said, I'm not him. I wasn't in that bed, not being able to sleep like he is. I wasn't suffering and not being able to be there with my family like he was. So I understood after a while after my anger. I was angry for no reason.
Well, of course you were. I think probably angry at him, angry at the government for not providing the right kind of care, angry that he was ever put in a situation in the first place that made him feel like he felt all of those things. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, and I think that you really showed that. And you showed that in the book too. That there's. Like a lot of understanding, but a lot of anger. And there's a lot of not even just anger, but just like angst about everything. And like, who do you talk to and who do you confide in and how? Like,
trust.
You know, yeah. And Bull is in a relationship. He has a wife and things don't go well for him.
Right.
Right.
And that happens to a lot of.
And I was going to ask that, how realistic is that?
That happened a lot of times. They go in with that strong relationship and the wife and the kids are home and they're constantly going. And then they don't want to say something's wrong with them. And then they're finally back home and they hit that wall, the brakes stopped and everything around is crashing. And they go to the one thing they know how to do. In his case, that night was drinking. And that kind of, and violence becomes part of that. So drinking once and kind of spreads it out until there's no, you can't repair that after a while. You can't stop. You can't tell your kid that you didn't hit your mom. You did in front of her, or you broke.
Right.
You can't stop that. So many marriages after being solid for a while were lost after coming home.
Yeah. Yeah. Is there a remedy for that? Do you think there's something that could be done to help that not be the case?
Oh, there's a lot more programs now in place since I got out.
Oh, good.
Actually help. They slow down the return process now. So you don't just come home and go right to your house. I mean, you come home, you don't just get time off as soon as you get home. You get home, next morning you go into classes to reintegrate into society, really reintegrate back into the world. They testing you. They're testing you for TBI. They're testing you to make sure that everything's all right with your mental health capacity. And it's at this time, if you tell the truth, you should get the help. But there's dudes and dudettes who are too big-headed or hard-headed that won't say they need help at that point, and or they think their career will end if they ask for help. Right. And for a long time in my career, that's how I was. I knew, and a lot of guys in my shoes from my generation up to when I got out, if you asked for help, you were not strong. So you wouldn't be put to the side. You wouldn't be in a leadership position. After my 2010-11 deployment, I came home and I asked for help. And they looked me right in the eyes and said, you go back and leave. I said, all right. So it wasn't until 2015 that I actually seen a doctor. So 2011 to 2015, I worked on to keep my head straight and in focus to not do anything to me or anyone around me.
So that was one of my questions I was going to ask. And so let's just dive into that. you do believe that since then, that there are more programs, that there is more help. Do you see, yes. I mean, you know, obviously there's still a horrible suicide rate going on, but some of that is probably from veterans who didn't get the help when they needed it. But you believe now that those veterans who are going in are seeing better mental health care in general?
I believe so. And I believe it's not just a, like a checklist medical care anymore. It's a look you in the eye and say, all right, what is actually bothering you? What did you see? And then let you choose which kind of therapy you want. So when I first got there, first thing they wanted to do is give you drugs.
Right.
I said, I'm not going to be a zombie. Because I walked through the VA hospital in Nashville, all I seen was guys and the older men and women in the wild, heads down, kind of gray. It all looked all gray. I was scared walking in there. I said, wow, this is worse than war. And the guys are like, I'm going to give you all these drugs because I take them. I said, no, I don't want them. I said, you didn't even look at me. You didn't give me drugs. And so I found a guy that did EMDR on me, his eye movement, to misdirection therapy or something. I can't remember the DNR, but.
It has something to do with like you talk about it I've read about that. It's a very interesting, it's for PTSD generally, right? Yeah.
He helped me out. Dr. King counts. He did that with me. And he had me every time I would, he had like little clickers in my hand. So every time I tell a story, I click it and tell him and I tell the whole story all the way through. He'd make like you're there, tell me what you're smelling, doing all this. And I did it, and that was I started with him end of 2015 through 2016, and I've been fine since. And once I got it all off my chest and was able to breathe and realize that there's more out there than just keeping that in my head and everything happened, I couldn't control everything that happened. There's no one that can do that. There's one person that can do that, or if you believe there's one person that can do that, it's not me, though. Can't do that. Right. And all I can do is help what's going on in front of me now. And he did that for me, and I'm forever thankful for him.
Oh, I'm sure. I'm sure. I was reading the other day. So my husband is a military veteran. He's a retiree. And he was watching some show, SEALs. I don't remember what it was. But and like, you know, seasons and seasons. So it was on for days. And toward the end, one of the things I kept hearing was PTS, PTS, PTS. And I kept thinking, where's the D? Where's the D? So I looked it up because I'm a research junkie and that's what I do. And what I read was really interesting. They said that they're leaving the D, which stands for disorder, off because it's not a disorder. Post-traumatic stress is a natural response to the types of things that you've seen. And so calling it a disorder is actually a disservice and makes people less likely to go get help because they don't want to admit that they have a disorder. So they're leaving the D off. Do you think something as simple as leaving the D off of a diagnosis will make a difference?
It might, because a lot of people don't want to be known as having a disorder, like you said. I don't want to be known as that guy with a disorder that's in the corner there, looking in the window, or whatever. Right. But I mean, I know I have PTS. I know I have TBI. So I know those things are in me and they're with me forever. And it's what I have to deal with. And I have to learn that. But I watch the same show. And if you watched the last episode of that, I don't know if you've seen the whole season.
I have. I've seen the whole thing. Yeah.
Last episode when Jason gets up in the front and they're, I guess, they're grilling him at the board, and everyone steps up and says, I have this problem. I have this problem.
Yeah. Goosebumps went up my arms.
Yeah. I said, that's kind of like the end of my book right there. Everyone has a problem, and now we're all going to try to get help. So,
At this time. Yeah. So I think it was awesome. I mean, I finished that last week, and now I'm talking with you today. So it was, you know, absolutely perfect timing. But it was the first time that I had heard it as PTS. Then the more I did research, I found that they consider it a D if it lasts a certain amount of time and PTS if it doesn't, right? And I thought, well, that was very interesting. And then just the idea that most veterans have PTS of some kind and that it is not a disorder, because what human wouldn't feel this given the trauma that they experienced? And I did like that idea. I just wondered if it was going to be an effective way of helping, or if it was just, I don't know. Sometimes it's like changing the name doesn't change the problem.
Right. You know? It's going to, it's going to have more people come forward and say they have it or admit they have it, I think, and those who didn't want that disorder on there.
Right.
And I think that show was the first show that openly said PTSD. I think that whole last season, they said it a lot.
They I noticed it without really noticing it, but there at the very end, it was like I heard it over and over and over, and it was like, I got to look this up and find out what's going on. Where did the D go?
I think it started when the number two guy was captured in Turkey or whatever. Yes. He had the PTS. And yeah, so they started that. And you know, we don't really hear it out here with the veterans' fear, but seeing it on there. And then I had a Navy SEAL actually on my show right after I watched that last episode. And I asked him about it. And he said, "No, I usually don't watch those shows, but that one, that got me, that one right there." Just like you said, he had chills. He said, "I wouldn't help. I was in." So, there you go.
Absolutely. What do you hope veterans will get from reading Out of the Darkness?
I hope that each one of them sees something in the book about them, and there's got to be a character that resonates with them, or as part of a character that resonates with them, and shows them that they too can be strong in the face of darkness, and they can step forward and see the light and the time, families and friends, and be there for as long as they can until they can't control outside influences. Control everything you can from within and stay out of that darkness.
Okay, what about for people like me who are non-veterans? What do you hope we get from reading it?
Just a little understanding of the struggle that vets go through, especially combat veterans, when they come back and they're not the same. I mean, no matter what they say, they're not the same. I hid it for a long time. I was the same. And I told my wife and daughter they were the problem from 2003 until 2015. They were the problem. It wasn't me. It was you. And then I finally looked in the mirror and said, "It's you. It's you. You are the problem."
Yeah. But is there a Taylor Swift song? "It's me. I'm the problem," I think is the.
It's me. It's 100% me. And once I took that ownership and we've healed as a family and we're doing much better now. And like my family is kind of like the exception to the rule of military marriages. We've been together and we'll be 30 years this year. So and she's been all with me. My daughter's 26, yeah. So, and she's been through a lot of it with us. So,
right.
So she's a rock mom when I wasn't home, and she's been through it all with both of us. So.
Right. Well, fantastic. That's kind of like a nice little beautiful bookend on the end of your story is that, you know, you did get to figure it out and that right. You have, you know, found that help. So I want to just bring up, you did bring it up earlier, but a little bit that you have a podcast, it's The Misfit Nation. So I want to know why the name and kind of tell people like, what's the purpose of your show?
All right. So the name comes from my platoon I had in Afghanistan in 2010 and 2011. I came right from Korea, landed in Kentucky for 60 days and then met my unit in Afghanistan. So I've never seen any of them before. I landed there as the new guy, a new leader, and there was this platoon that was just thrown together of people from all different sides of the plane, guys and girls who weren't, I guess they were new intersections, and they were just thrown together to be FOB security and quick reaction for it. And first on, I was like, "Hey, just walk around, tell me things you can find." So I walked around, found things. He said, "All right, this is your platoon." I said, "What?" I said, "All right, great." So I went in there. I said, "What do you guys want to be called?" "Sorry, we're like the Island of Misfit Toys." And I said, yes, you are.
Misfit Nation became the thing,
Yes, the Island of Misfit Toys. So it's down below me in the back there. There's a round that hit our base and the metal plate that says Misfits on it that one of my soldiers made that year. It's still here with me. So when I came up with the idea for the show, I asked them if it's all right to call it Misfit Nation. "Yeah, go ahead, Sergeant, you can do that." So that's where Misfit Nation came from. Awesome. Excuse me.
And the purpose of your show is?
To keep, and when it first started, was to get veterans on, to tell a story, to get that pressure off their chest, because I knew it helped me. Getting that pressure off my chest helped me tell my story, made me feel free, made everything free about what I was doing, and that's why I started the show. But then they said, "Hey, we need help with other things, how to write a book." So get people like yourself to come on the show, your process of writing a book, how to get to Hollywood, how to start a business. Now we're 335 episodes in, I believe, now, at least today, so 335, and it's been going great.
Yeah, I've been on a couple of times. I'm thrilled. Having me on a third time, I must be okay. Yes.
Pretty good, yeah.
Yeah, so, well, wonderful. How do people get up with you if they want to learn about your book or if they want to be on your podcast? Where do they go?
They can go to themisfitnation.com, and on there is a contact on there. I usually respond within a day unless I'm down and out with the FLU. I'm still trying to get back with people today because I like to lose people. Because, you know, if you don't answer back, people kind of lose. They float away.
Right.
Oh, I forgot I wrote you. So, but I try to get back as quick as possible. Hopefully, I'll get someone else to help me out here soon. And I don't have to do all the work and do my day job as well.
Awesome. So I heard you allude to writing the second book. What are you working on now?
It's called Forged in Resilience. And it starts off with the surviving two members of the team as they rebuild the team from scratch. They're one part of the story, and then Bull and Cal are the second part of the story on coast to coast, basically. Still being friends, still talking, but all their work's going to come together as the team deploys at the end.
Fantastic. And your hope is to have it ready when?
By December. I'm going to try to be like you on the same kind of schedule, December.
Yep. And then what about, what was I going to say? I had a question. Oh, you said in December. The name, that's what I wanted to know. Do you have a title for it yet?
Yes, Forged in Resilience.
Forged in Resilience. Okay. Fantastic. Anything else down the pike that you think? I mean, do you think that being an author is what you're going to do, or?
I think it's a fun thing I do on the side, I guess.
Okay.
I'm also going for a PhD in Homeland Security from Liberty right now. So fantastic. That dissertation process is about to start up in earnest this semester. And so once that's done, I'll be able to concentrate more on authoring and not just research for that stuff and then write this.
Right.
Concentrate in one area. And I'll probably write a bigger book with that after. But I think I can do author. I love writing and sharing stories. I think I've always have done that. I just didn't publish it. So I have all kinds of journals and stuff all my time.
Well, fantastic. Oh, man. Take those journals and turn them into things. That would be fantastic. Yes. So have you ever considered writing a memoir?
I have not, but I'm thinking about it heavily now.
Yeah. I mean, then you'd probably have to go through a lot of process to get that taken care of because of how many years were you in the military?
22.
Yeah. You're like my husband. He was in for 25. So, you get past a certain point and you can't talk about your life without having to bring in the military because that's what it was, right?
It's half my adult life. So.
Exactly. So is there anything else that you wish that I had asked you that we did not get to?
I think we hit everything pretty good right there.
Well, fantastic. Well, Rich, thank you so much for being on. I really enjoyed having you on the show.
Thank you, Terry. I'll see you in a couple weeks.
All right. Wonderful.
Thank you for listening to Online for Authors, where I, Terry M. Brown, author of character-driven fiction and host of the podcast, introduce readers to characters they'd love to invite to lunch. Tune in next Tuesday for another podcast episode.